19th century. The transition in the Society of Friends to a closed, self-centered, introspective group. And I've also said something in the last time we met about quietism in the Society of Friends. Now, the subject we will be looking at for the next week or two will be some of the social expressions of Quakerism in this period, as well as before and after. Nothing that I have said about the character of Quakerism in this period would give you a hint that they had any initiative or had any impact on the world outside. As a matter of fact, they did. And it's that impact that I want to talk about. I think you may remember that in one of the readings, Russell spoke of Quakerism as being social mysticism. And he meant by that two different things, that is, both things. He meant that it was group mysticism, the collected group of friends, especially in their worship. It wasn't individual mystics, it wasn't saints sitting each on a separate pillar in the wilderness, but it was a community that in their worship life and in their other life were socially connected and affected by one another. And the other thing he mentioned, and this is what we'll be looking at, is that their mysticism unexpectedly had social effects. It led to a concern for the relationships between men and in society at large. In fact, you have the rather striking contrast of very introspective people having more effect on society than many people that were less introspective. This feature of Quakerism, and I don't quite know what to call it, social impact, if that's what you want to call it, or social concern. The Quakers have referred to these positions of theirs as social testimonies. This feature is first very conspicuous in Quakerism, and second, it is congenial to the interests of modern social idealism, both religious and secular. And in some ways it is unique and different from other approaches to social questions. I don't think the Friends themselves have quite understood it. I'm about to tell you what is the real explanation. At least I don't think they've analyzed it. And I think therefore before we go into any one phase of it, I'll give you some of my ideas as to what to look for, and later we'll check up as we go along. The Friend's position is so different from that of other people that are concerned for these matters that often it seems to make very strange bedfellows. I'll just give you one case. Quakers, as you know, are interested in peace, prevention of war. A largely Quaker organization after the First World War found itself getting large contributions of money from donors that they didn't identify at all. But it was for support of this Committee for Prevention of War, that was the name of it, the Committee for the Prevention of War, with headquarters in Washington. These checks came largely from Wisconsin and St. Louis. And in the course of time, they thought they better look up some of these generous donors, perhaps get some more money from them, try to identify and see who they were. They discovered they were brewers. During the war, the American government had clamped down wartime prohibition in order to save supplies. And after the war, the brewers who'd suffered by this compulsory prohibition thought to themselves, if this is what war means, we don't want any of it ourselves. And here's a highly respectable independent group that is working to prevent another war, and they're quite worth some of our income as contributions. Well, I think you would see that this is rather unexpected association, and yet that it was a natural thing for these people to do. One reason I think that people don't entirely understand this tendency to social concern is that it's not a main objective. It is a byproduct of other aspects of Quakerism. The book, The Bjorns, which you're looking at and we'll be reading again next week, has chapters which illustrates that. The title of the book, as you know, Friends as Pioneers in Social Work. She deals largely with the British Quakers and less with the American scene, but this author found in several lines, some of which, one of which you read for today, and there are others given, in which the Friends were active and forward-looking and anticipating other people's reforms. So that this feature, which we will deal with one area after another, and which she deals with in separate areas and separate chapters, it covers quite a wide scope in the social situation. In fact, I might mention the chapters that she doesn't write, which she might have. It is written before the First World War. She's a scholar, a Prussian scholar, and I'm not at all surprised that she left out certain areas in which Friends have an equally good record, if it's good. She does include slavery, though you're not reading that chapter, but she does not include their attitude towards war. I guess she thought maybe that was a misdirected bit of idealism not worth mentioning. Or maybe she thought they never had any success in it, but at any rate they tried. That could be said. She says nothing about racial discrimination. She says nothing about civil rights. And she says nothing about the status of women in society, in all of which fields there is something to be said about the Quaker activity. But what she does write about is well put, and you'd expect a Prussian lady of this period not to be too sympathetic with these areas which I just now mentioned. Now, instead of today taking up any one of these, next time we will take up slavery. And this paper, which I put in your hands, is a very early, if not the earliest, statement of a group of Friends on slavery. I'll ask you to read it over before Monday so that I can find out whether what you feel about the approach. You want to remember that this was before anybody had raised their voice against slavery at all. It was an accepted institution, just as much accepted as our social institutions are today. Capitalist system, government, ordinary institutions. Slavery was one of them. As I suggested, it's hard to see why Friends were pioneers are sensitive in this regard. They were extreme individualists. Every man a law to himself, no regimentation, and therefore why they should do anything collectively or can care for collective society is rather unexpected. The modern complex in Quakerism of committees, where groups of people are selected for a given purpose, almost completely absent in early Quakerism. The only committee in England in the first period was what they call the Meeting for Suffrage, which is sort of an executive committee. But in Philadelphia, there were no committees other than that, the corresponding one, until 1796. And then two committees were formed. One, a yearly meeting committee to have a boarding school, and which turned out into Westtown School, and the other, a yearly meeting committee for the gradual civilization of the American Indians. The word gradual should be underscored. But those were both, if you like, collective enterprises authorized by the yearly meeting. So that officially, at least, the theory of a church or a Quaker group having agencies dedicated to certain social enterprises is not original.